All right, we're back in session. Clerk, please read, Carla, please read the item. Sorry, I was reading a script. That's rather abrupt.
Item 947, appeal of Erica Cedar, DLR Group, and appeal of Peter Major Architect PC against the Historic Landmarks Commission's decision of approval with conditions of historic resource review of exterior alterations and rehabilitation of the Portland building in the central city at 1120 Southwest 5th Avenue, LU1715-3413 HRMAD.
Well, first of all, I want to thank everybody for their patience. We're an hour and a half late, and you were sitting here very patiently, and I want to acknowledge that and thank you for that, and I want to personally apologize. We just had a lot of public input and interest in the last item. Our first order of business today is for the city attorney to give us some information and make some announcements about today's hearing.
Okay. Good afternoon. This is an on-the-record hearing. This means that you must limit your testimony to the material and issues in the record. We will begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. There are two appellants of the Landmarks Commission's decision. So following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. Appellant 1, which is Erica Cedar with the DLR Group, will go first and will have 10 minutes to present her case. Appellant 2, Peter Meyer Architect, will go next and will have 10 minutes to present his case. Following the appellants, Council will hear public testimony. Each person will have 3 minutes. After public testimony, each appellant will have 10 minutes to respond to the testimony, with Appellant 1 going first and then Appellant 2. Finally, each appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the other appellant, with Appellant 1 going first and then Appellant 2. The Council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, Council will set a future date for the adoption of the findings and a final vote on the appeal. If Council takes a vote today, that will conclude the matter before the Council. For on-the-record hearings, I'd like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing City Council today. The evidentiary record is closed. This hearing is to decide only if the Landmarks Commission made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to it. This means you must limit your testimony to arguments based on the record compiled by the Landmarks Commission. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the Landmarks Commission. You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to the Landmarks Commission. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. The Council will not consider the new information, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. If you believe a person who has addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that is not in the record, you may object to that argument. And finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the Landmarks Commission may be raised in this appeal to City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before the Landmarks Commission, you may object to the City Council's consideration of that issue. Lastly, the applicant must identify any constitutional challenges to the conditions of approval. If the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues related to the proposed condition of approval with enough specificity to allow the Council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Do any members of the Council wish to declare a conflict of interest? No member of the Council has declared a conflict of interest. Do any members of the Council have an ex parte contact to declare information gathered outside of this hearing that they would like to disclose?
I know I've had many meetings about the Portland building, but I think there was one meeting where there was a discussion of some of the issues related to the design with staff of City of Portland and their consultant.
Very good. Commissioner Udaly, did you have anything you'd like to declare?
Similarly, I was briefed on the Portland building renovation two or more times prior to the Council passing the budget. I meet with Tom Reinhart regularly, but we have not further discussed this issue. And I work next to the Portland building, obviously, but have not seen or taken action on anything related to this matter.
And I have certainly been briefed, particularly not so much on the design elements It's more in my nature to be concerned about the fiscal aspects of the project, so I've spent a considerable amount of time digging into the financial details of this project. Commissioner Fritz?
I have been briefed by staff, obviously been to the building hundreds of times, see it on a daily basis, but nothing pertinent to either of these appeals.
Very good. Does anybody in the council chambers present today wish to ask any of the commissioners about their ex parte contacts or information that any of us have disclosed? Nobody is looking to ask questions. And I realize I'm stating the obvious. This is a formal process, so I have to say that. Have any members of the council made any visits to the site involved in this matter? I will take it that all of us are a yes to that. Does anyone present in the council chamber wish to ask any of our commissioners about any of the commissioners about observations on the site? It appears that nobody is interested in that. Do council members have any other matters that need to be discussed before we weigh in on this particular hearing?
It's the one thing that's just come to mind is I understand part of the appeal is about the HVAC, and I did have a conversation a while ago about the ventilation system with respect to the restaurant areas that are currently on the ground floor and whether or not those would be carried over to the new building. I don't know whether that's pertinent or not, but I just wanted to put that on the record.
You're the best. Does anybody present in the council chamber wish to ask Commissioner Fritz about her knowledge of the HVAC system as it pertains to this hearing? It does not look like it. Very good. Then it's time for testimony. First, we'll take the staff report, approximately 10 minutes. And again, if people could just state their name for the record, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. Hillary Adam, Bureau of Development Services. I'm going to try to go through this as quickly as I can, but it is fairly dense because of the two separate appeals. So this is the staff presentation, and at the bottom you can see how it will be laid out, and each of those sections will be highlighted so you can see where we are in the process of the presentation. Regarding the regulatory framework, I want to call your attention to the approval criteria. I asked the council clerk to pass that out in written form so you could have it in front of you at all times. There have been questions about what is and is not the approval criteria. This is the list of the approval criteria, and so is that in front of you. So it is section 3384606G, other approval criteria of the Portland Zoning Code, the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines, modification criteria found in 3384607.0 of the Portland Zoning Code, and adjustment approval criteria in 3380.5040 in the Zoning Code. Some background on the history of this project. We had a first design advice request with the Historic Landmarks Commission in January of 2016. That was the first point where the commission got some good information about the state of the building envelope at the Portland building and its failure. The commission recognized the challenges of postmodern buildings at the time. A lot of them were being built with new untested materials, which have often failed. Because of that, they indicated an openness to an idea that was floated at the time of wrapping the building in a new skin, a rain screen system. I'll get into that a little bit later. They were also open to changes to the windows, replacement tile, partial enclosure of the loggia at the north and south ends at the ground floor, and they were strongly in favor of removal of the parking entrance on the 4th Avenue side. We had a second DAR in December of 2016. They affirmed their previous direction, and there was general support for the rain screen strategy at that time. they noted the quality of the materials was critical to their ultimate approval of that proposal. They also indicated support for new storefront glazing at the ground level. We had a pre-application conference in November of 2016. That's a required step before a Type 3 historic resource review can be submitted. And then our first hearing was held on June 26th of this year. There was general support for the treatment, the rain screen treatment, but there was concern about the cumulative effect of the changes that I'll get into a little bit. One, just the idea of a rain screen system is something that's not really done in the preservation world. So that, in combination with some proposed modifications of that system, such as enlarging the size of the tiles at the ground level and at the upper levels, that and rooftop mechanical, those three things in combination were noted as concerns. The commission requested more information and some revisions. Public testimony was taken at that hearing. There was concerns noted about the changes in the material and the potential future delisting from the National Register of Historic Places due to the proposed treatment. The record was requested to be held open by a member of the public, and we returned about 4 weeks later on July 24th. On that day, the commission voted 4-0 to support or to approve with conditions. The decision was issued a few days later, and then two appeals came in, the first by Erica Cedar on behalf of Kristen Walls at the Office of Management and Finance, and the second from Peter Meijer. So this is the building in context. You've seen it. I won't dwell on the context. But this is the proposal. It is a rehabilitation of the existing building that includes the following items. On the right, I will read them. A new exterior rain screen. At the upper levels, that material will be metal. At the lower levels, that will be terracotta. Currently, it's concrete at the upper levels and ceramic tile. Replacement of existing formed decorative elements at upper levels with new. Those would be made of metal. Replacement of all dark windows with clear enclosure of the two loggia bays I mentioned. Reconfiguration of ground level storefront footprints and revision to floor to ceiling glazing. Removal of the existing vehicle area opening on the east and enclosure with an enlarged curtain wall. And replacement of the existing mechanical systems at the second floor and the roof with new rooftop mechanical. They're also requesting two modifications. One is to reduce the amount of ground floor windows on the north facade and on the east facade, and to reduce the depth of ground floor active uses at the loggia from the required 25-foot depth to approximately 16 to 20 feet. Those two modifications are requested because this is considered a major remodel. Anytime you have a building that is undergoing a major remodel, they have to meet these two standards. So they're requesting to not have to meet them because that may have required significant changes to the outside of the building in terms of their openings and the ground floor spaces. They're also requesting an adjustment to reduce the number of required loading spaces to zero by removing the two existing substandard loading spaces on site in the basement. And that is for the purpose of closing off that entrance on 4th Avenue. So this here is, this is basically what a rain screen system, just in case you don't know. This is what the existing building is here. It's a concrete skin. All of this beige color and these red columns are concrete. They're proposing to basically put an outside layer of metal rain screen on the outside with insulation in between, and that is for the purpose of protecting it from water infiltration. Also, these elements, these formed elements, they're proposing to replace these with metal so that they would be integrated with the rain screen system. And then all of these windows that are currently essentially black glass here and here, Those would be replaced with clear. The mirrored glass here is a character-defining element, so that will stay as mirrored. Here is where the two loggia bays on the north and south will be infilled with floor area. That's this area here and this area here. And then the images at the bottom show how the ground floor storefronts are proposed to change with existing on the left. This image speaks to the closure of this parking entrance here, and this is what it would look like. Behind this glazing here would be some community seating areas that offer views out to the park. This area is, or this line right here is basically a floor line, so everything below it would be back of house or basement level. So that would be obscured by, they're proposing a fritted glass. And then also here on this slide, this actually also speaks to the adjustment. If they're enclosing this space with habitable area, you have to remove the loading spaces. So that's what they're requesting to do. This image on the bottom speaks to the mechanical systems that they're proposing. This is what's existing now at the roof level. They're proposing a number more of mechanical units here and then two large air handling units on the west. This slide speaks to the modifications. For your information, this blue line, I don't know how well you can read it, but basically we count ground floor windows starting if they have a sill that is 4 feet or lower, between 0 and 4 feet from the sidewalk. If the sill is not between that area, it doesn't get counted at all. So even if you have windows, I'm really running over time. Even if you have windows that...
So I want to be clear, you can run over time.
Okay, thank you.
We'll give the... do we give the appellants the same amount, or how does that work?
No, you do not need to.
But she can go over 10.
She has the staff, yes.
Yeah, okay, yes. Very good. Thank you.
Sorry. I apologize.
No worries.
If the windows do not start below that blue line, you can't count them towards the required window area. So because basically none of the windows start below that blue line, the modification is to 0%. And then here for our ground floor active use, in order to... the ground floor active use has to start from the exterior building wall, which is the outside of the building, the blue pedestal wall back. So either you meet that 25 feet with infilled floor area or consider the loggia floor area. They are modifying that, the location of that wall, and requesting a modification to be less than 25. So the zoning for the site is central commercial with a design and historic resource protection overlay. They are meeting the FAR and height requirements. Some quick background history on the building. It was initiated through a design competition. City picked this proposal. A big part of that was the budget. It is fairly well known that the budget for this building was relatively low, which has participated in part of the issues that we're experiencing today. The image on the bottom left, that is building basically without any makeup or clothing on. And you can see how the concrete walls, which are its skin and structure, kind of contribute to the darkness that you often hear about the inside of that building. On the right, that is the finished product when it was built. These are some images just of the building challenges, some of the water infiltration issues. Water basically seeps through the concrete walls and also comes in through the window sealants. That's a constant maintenance and repair issue that the city is hoping to address with this proposal. So the decision for the Landmarks Commission was to approve with conditions. I've abridged the conditions that were part of that decision here, but I highlighted condition G, which is verbatim. because it is the condition most at issue with appellant number one, and it is the proposed air handling units shall either be located at the interior of the building or be significantly, meaning at least 50%, reduced in scale and not increased in number. I also just wanted to highlight condition I, which is that the city offered to place a covenant on the building that would require demolition review if demolition by some future owner or the city itself was someday desired, and that local landmark listing would be pursued if the National Register status were to be removed. So appellant number one's issue, as I highlighted, they are concerned with condition G, and they request that it be stricken from the approval. They state that all approval criteria are met without the inclusion of condition G and that there is no viable alternative. The Landmarks Commission felt that condition or guideline, Central City Guideline C11, was not met by the proposal, noting concerns with the size of the units and their visibility from the street. This is a sightline study, which shows across the street, you won't see it, but from about a block away or two blocks away, you will see it, particularly from the south. Appellant 2 has a number, a lot more issues that I want to go through for you. Appellant 2 is requesting that City Council reverse the decision of the Historic Landmarks Commission. They note that approval criteria are not met by the proposal. They have highlighted these criteria that they believe are not met at the top, and also noted some other issues, and I'm going to address those other issues first. They state that the Comprehensive Plan 2035 policies are not met. I would note that Comprehensive Plan 2035 is not yet in effect, therefore these policies are not applicable to this project. They state that the project goals related to interior spaces are not met. The project goals were determined before the land use application was submitted, and they are not applicable approval criteria either. The proposed encroachment was not reviewed via standard methods and is not necessary. This is also not relevant to the approval criteria. The PBOT response to the land use review noted an approved encroachment permit, and encroachment permits are reviewed through a separate process. Kirk Kruger from PBOT is here if you have PBOT-related questions. The proposed overcladding design is overly expensive. The cost of the project is only a matter of consideration in determining the proper land use procedure type, and a project cost is not an approval criterion, and that the new design does not meet the standards of preservation. As I indicated, this is not a typical preservation treatment for a historic building, but the commission recognized that the proposed treatment was reasonable to ensure the continued life of the building while retaining Michael Graves' vision. So I'll go back to the approval criteria that are actually applicable regarding Appellant 2's concerns. I'll try to do these quickly. With regard to 060G, number one, historic character, the commission felt that the general failure of the building envelope and removal of original materials was unavoidable in order to ensure that the building would be able to function in a practical and humane way. The proposed approach was reasonable in order to ensure Graves' vision. Record of its time. Again, the new skin will serve as an allegory of the building's time, 1982, and, as well as this time, and will serve to tell the story of how this project, how the building first came to be, its challenges, and what the response was. And the commission added a condition that interpretive materials should be installed and the historic teal tiles at the Fifth Avenue entry should remain so that visitors to the building would be able to easily understand the changes from the historic condition to the proposed condition. Historic changes, The commission stated that there have been alterations to the building since its construction, but none of those have acquired significance, so that did not apply. Historic features, I want to read this one just because it is sort of the overarching idea behind how the commission got to yes. Due to the extensive deterioration of the existing building envelope and repeated past attempts to address these issues, the commission acknowledged that a traditional restoration of the building, whereby existing materials are preserved to the greatest extent possible, is not practical. Therefore, the commission finds that the proposed rain screen system is the proper approach to ensure the building's longevity. Preserving some original building materials and integrating them into the new system is relatively impractical and would lead to additional maintenance issues in the future. The commission finds that the proposed replacement of all major features of the building is warranted in order to rehabilitate the building as a unified whole. Historic materials, no chemical or physical treatments such as sandblasting would be used. Seven, the proposed treatment will be differentiated from the old. That will be plainly clear, I believe. Architectural compatibility and hierarchy of compatibility. While the exterior of the building will be completely new, the applicant has made significant effort to match his Graves' design as much as possible and to follow his design principles. Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines. The proposal will result in the building encroaching into the right-of-way 5 inches on the north and south and 7 inches into the right-of-way on the east. This is because of the rain screen system. The building is essentially at the property line now, so you add that rain screen system, it's going to encroach. However, because the building is set back so far on the west, the relative ratio of building to open space is relatively negligible. Demolition was considered by City Council previously, and this proposal seeks to rehabilitate the building, therefore A6 is met. Promote quality and permanence, C2. This is a quality rain screen system. The proposed materials are high-quality materials, and they will permanently resolve the water infiltration issues. Respect to architectural integrity. Again, with the proposed design, the applicant has made significant efforts to replicate Graves' vision. Complement the context of existing buildings. The Portland building will continue to complement its neighbors. Design for coherency. The proposed rain screen will be composed of interlocking parts. Therefore, it is intrinsically coherent, and it will replicate the original design. Integrate encroachments. Sorry, I know you're getting tired, so am I. The proposed encroachments will slightly reduce the sidewalk. However, the materials at the sidewalk level will be higher quality than they currently are. So that will enhance the pedestrian environment. Integrate roofs and use rooftop C11. Again, this is where condition G was added. So because the commission felt that the proposed units on the west side were too large. And lastly, with modification to ground floor windows, the modification approval criteria allow for a modification to be granted if meeting the standard would destroy the historic character, where you find that the historic character is more important than meeting the standard, you can approve that modification. So, last slide. These are your options. You can deny the appeals and uphold the Historic Landmarks Commission's decision to approve with conditions as written. Two, you can grant appellant number one's appeal, striking condition G that would uphold the decision but remove condition G related to rooftop mechanical equipment. Three, you can grant appellant two's appeal, overturning the Historic Landmarks Commission decision that would deny the project. And that's it. I'm sorry for taking so long.
No problem. It was very well done. Thank you. So that is the staff report. Any immediate questions for staff? Then let's move to appellant number one, the Office of Management and Finance. You have 10 minutes.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Mayor, commissioners. My name is Erica Cedar. I'm an architect with DLR Group, and I'm going to figure out how to get this into presentation mode. Just 1 minute. F5. Thank you. Sorry. There we go.
Ta-da.
Thank
you.
What
was it? Control M? Is that the answer?
It was Alt 798. No. Control L.
Control L. Okay,
yes.
Very good.
All right. I'm here on behalf of the Office of Management and Finance to present our appeal requesting that you uphold the Historic Landmark Commission's approval of the proposed modifications to the Portland Building and to remove Condition G relating to rooftop mechanical equipment. The Portland Building is an iconic part of downtown Portland and an important piece of architectural history. However, during its initial construction, many decisions were made that favored low cost over other considerations, such as performance, durability, or the realization of Michael Graves' original vision. As a result, the building has been plagued with issues, including water infiltration that began soon after its completion. After 30 years of repairs that failed to remedy the existing envelope, the city selected DLR Group and Howard S. Wright to lead a design-build team. One of the primary charges to this team was to develop a holistic solution to the existing facade that would respect the historic design. Our team has developed a proposal that balances the many programmatic, technical, and aspirational goals for the city and provides for the Portland Building a lasting high-performance enclosure, a better interior environment, improved daylight and thermal comfort, and improved interaction with the pedestrian experience. I would like to take a moment to recognize the efforts of both BDS staff and the Historic Landmarks Commission. We are grateful for their willingness to listen and work with us throughout the process. Through two design advice requests and two hearings, we were able to discuss the challenges and possible solutions, as well as demonstrate how much thought and diligence went into developing the final proposal. Ultimately, the Commission unanimously approved the proposal with a list of conditions. All of these proposed conditions can be met without compromising the project, with the exception of Condition G. Hillary already had this in her presentation, but Condition G states that the proposed air handling units shall either be located on the interior or be reduced by 50%. So the two units that are in question are outlined in red and located on the left side of the plan that you see there. Unfortunately, there's no viable technical solution that meets the condition stated without creating significant negative impacts to the project. I want to very quickly explain that air handlers are the part of an HVAC system that tempers and circulates air through the building. In order to function, these units need to take in fresh air, and the best source for high-quality outside air is at the roof level. Drawing air from lower elevations would result in reduced air quality for the building occupants and would require large louvers to be placed somewhere within the historic facade. The addition of these louvers would not only disrupt the historic design, but potentially reduce valuable existing window area. Drawing air from the roof to air handlers located in the basement would require significant structural changes in order to accommodate new vertical shafts, would significantly reduce the usable square footage of floor area, and would result in a significant drop in the efficiency and lifespan of the air handling equipment. The scenario would also add significant cost to the project. Reducing the equipment size by 50% is also not technically feasible. The Portland building is a 15-story building. Reducing the equipment size would result in insufficient air distribution for the building occupants and would not meet code or the city's green building policy. The approval criteria that is the basis of the condition is from the Central City Fundamental Guidelines, item C11. We intend to show how we meet the condition as follows. The first part of that condition says integrate roof function, shape, surface, materials with the building's original design concept. The roof is primarily occupied by mechanical units. It has been since the building was built. And the proposal maintains this existing function. The equipment is rectilinear and symmetrical and ties in well with the building's overall design concept. And finally, the air handling units are proposed to be covered with a housing that basically provides a clean, uncluttered appearance, so no fans or pipes or anything everywhere. They really just look like very plain beige boxes. This part of the criteria relates to the size and placement of rooftop mechanical to minimize views. As I've already stated, the mechanical units have been sized appropriately to the building. The placement of the mechanical units has been done in a way to make them symmetrical and clean and as far away from the roof edges as possible to minimize visibility. In terms of view, as Hillary noted, we provided what are called sightline diagrams that are basically a diagram that little arrows point from a person of average height standing on the sidewalk and what they would be able to see from that vantage point. We have provided these sightline diagrams that prove that from any location around the building's adjacent sidewalks, or in this one, even across the street of and across Chapman Park in front of the Justice Center, you would not be able to see any of the proposed mechanical units. The final portion of the guideline deals with developing rooftop terraces and promotes using landscaped roof areas. The Portland building currently has an eco roof on the main roof of the tower as well as the roof of the penthouse that functions as one of the building's primary stormwater management tools, and that is proposed to remain. So for the reasons stated, we believe that the proposed mechanical equipment meets the intent of the C11 guideline, and we request that you uphold the Landmarks Commission's decision but remove item G from the conditions of approval.
Very good. Commissioner Fritz.
How is the building ventilated now?
I'm going to go back to a exterior photograph. The mechanical units actually take up the majority of the second floor. And you can see the second floor area that may look like windows. Those are all louvers. So all of the air is being taken from essentially adjacent to the bus mall.
Okay. And that penthouse, what's the penthouse used for?
It currently houses mechanical equipment.
And will it be needed for that in the future?
Yeah, it contains most of the machinery that runs the elevators, some additional HVAC equipment is being located inside of that penthouse, but unfortunately there's not enough room for these air handler units within that.
And the elevator mechanical equipment can't go somewhere else?
The elevators are not proposed to be replaced as part of this project, so all of that equipment is existing to remain.
Thank you. Oh, one final question, sorry.
Yes.
You mentioned the view from the other sidewalk on the opposite side of Fifth Avenue.
Yes.
What about the view from the next level up? Because I've seen a lot of tours are taking visitors on the first floor rather than the ground floor.
I'm sorry, the first level up from where?
From street level.
from street level. Actually, this photograph that you see on your screen right now was taken from the second floor terrace of the, I think it's the Standard Insurance Building, Kitty Corner. So as so you can see, you can't even see the penthouse at this vantage point.
So with the proposed placement of the HVAC, would from that second floor of the Standard Building, you wouldn't still be able to see it?
You should not be able to, no.
Thank you.
Could you go back to that early slide? There was an illustration of the original design. It had some architectural detail.
Yes.
Yeah, details on the roof that don't exist, right?
Correct.
Was there any conversation about adding those back to perhaps kind of disguise the HVAC?
There were multiple conversations about this, and I think as one of the issues that we ran into is that throughout the design competition, Michael Graves' office altered their proposal many, many times, and this sketch sort of represents one iteration of that. So it'd be very difficult to kind of pick which iteration would be the appropriate one to go back to.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
That's all I had.
That's it. Okay.
Okay.
Very good. I'm sorry. I'm sitting there waiting for
That's all right.
some grand finale. Any further questions at this point? Very good. We'll move on now to appellant number two. Peter, I should know how to pronounce you. Is it Meisher?
It is.
Meisher. Thank you. Peter Meisher, come on up. What did we decide? It was Control L?
Control L is what I heard.
Okay. And again, I'll just ask legal counsel to make sure if there's anything that, isn't supposed to be introduced, you'll call that out, of course, or help call that out. Good. Thank you.
Mayor, commissioners, I'm Peter Meijer, Peter Meijer Architect. One question you may have for me is, why am I alone in the opposition to this project? And the short answer is, I'm not. The Portland Building has always been controversial, and in essence, it's been the view of local versus the view of those outside of Portland on the national and international levels. Locally, at best, the building's ignored, and probably if you took a vote, most people would not like it. Outside, it's revered as a historic icon and very important both internationally and nationally. I'm not alone locally. You've gotten letters from Restore Oregon, Doko Momo Oregon chapter, and I have received calls, emails, and stopped on the street from people who are supportive of a person who would stand up and say, this is a public project. Are we doing the right thing? And it takes personal and professional courage as a previous member of the team to step back and say, this project is going the wrong direction. I am, in essence, a whistleblower. I'm also not alone on the international level. You've received letters from Doko Momo or US. You've received letters from Historic Trust for National Preservation, and most importantly, from the National Park Service. I'm going to bring up, and the appeal document that we wrote did go through all the relevant review criteria, and we itemized the positions, but I'm going to bring up four of the proposals that I think the city isn't meeting from their own goals. Those include additional daylight on the upper floors, meeting community needs, and by that I mean the public realm, the sidewalk, demonstrating fiscal responsibility, and maintaining the historic and iconic status of this building. Undoubtedly, you have heard the number one complaint of those who work in this building is the lack of sufficient daylight. So much so that the primary signs of success for your project team are light, 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 and more light. And so as an architect, looking at a proposal that essentially would put a new wall in front of the building up to 11 inches away, we had to ask our question, with such a small existing window, would you really get more light? So we ran those daylight studies on the 11th floor. We could have easily picked the 10th, the 11th, the 12th, the 13th, or the 14th floor that coincided with those small punched openings in the concrete that you saw that won't be changed. We're not asking you to understand the software that goes into this. You can step back and ask yourself, if you have a window and you're putting a new, and you're essentially making the depth of that 10 inches further away, are you really getting more light? The reason this is into the negative, the one feature you are gaining is you're going from a dark glass to a light glass. Otherwise, this would show a reduced amount of light. We also don't think the proposal enhances the public realm. The city has a zero tolerance for encroachment. And in fact, you can't put a door swing of an inch, 2 inches, 3 inches, and certainly 7 inches into the public right-of-way. The city goes further and tells to building owners, if you have a previous encroachment, perhaps it was a utility company that put bollards around a gas meter, you, the owner, under a major project, has to remove that previous encroachment. You have to repair sidewalks that used to be driveways. The city has a zero tolerance level. The Portland building's encroachment doesn't even meet this written city policy for encroachment. And we think this issue alone raises serious, substantive, and procedural due process. Graphic for you. Graphic on the left, existing building, 2 inches. Graphic on the right, the new proposal, 7 inches at the sidewalk level. The project is also bad urban design. Two criteria that you often hear on the 4th Avenue side is a garage opening onto the parkway. And the second one is a lack of pedestrian friendliness. This project does neither to improve that. And in fact, the urban design panel has written a letter in that regard. The project moves from substandard window openings, as shown by staff, to 0%. It goes the wrong way in regards to the public realm. The proposal design is fiscally irresponsible. By that, the relevant review criteria is what is the responsibility of a public agency. I'm not asking you to prioritize preservation over other social equity issues. I'm not asking you to weigh in on houselessness versus preservation, but I am asking you to look at the total project dollars associated with this and ask if there are other ways to approach this project, fix what's broken, and save money so it can go elsewhere. You can also look at the other city-owned properties of a historic landmark status, Veterans Memorial Coliseum, Pittock Mansion, this building, that could benefit from even some savings on a renovation project. The city early on rejected $250,000 for this project from the Getty Foundation. I have two questions for that. Whoever turns down $250,000 of money, and what jurisdiction would ever turn down the Getty Foundation? These are highly competitive. That is unheard of. And I get it. This project is a line of credit, but at some point, those banks are going to be asking for that money to be repaid, and that repayment is coming out of public funds. So I'm raising the issue of full faith and credit plus bonded indebtedness as being subjective to voter approval. The Portland Building's own Community Oversight also raised the issue on the budget, particularly on one item alone, that over and above the stated $195 million, there's a $3.5 million increase by the skin alone of this building. And this project certainly fails on meeting the basic standards of preservation. We have zoning codes. We explain to the public. We tell other property owners. We deny them demolition rights on their historic resource committee. And we go at length to explain ourselves why we do this. On this project, those standards aren't even met. There's only two ways to remove a building from the National Register listing. One, by God, meaning earthquake, flood, fire, and the other is man-made. And man-made is you do such egregious changes that the building is delisted or you demolish it. In essence, this project is demolishing its own historic resource. The city trivializes itself in the argument by saying it's not the built work, but it's obviously the design intent of Michael Graves. It also goes further by undermining historic significance and devaluating the original means and methods of construction by complaining about it instead of fixing. There are numerous professionals in this city that will tell you how to fix the problems. And sadly, the Portland Historic Landmarks fail to evaluate the project on these basic guidelines. And we believe that the Oregon Supreme Court will uphold these basic tenets of preservation. In closing, I'm asking City Council, as I'm sure the rest of the public is asking, for transparency, for accountability, and to uphold our own city codes. So I am asking you to reverse the Landmarks Commission's approval, but also to have the courage to go back to your design team and have them start over, because this is the wrong approach to this project. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And legal counsel, could I get a clarification when you have a second? So ordinarily, when we just have one appellant, we take testimony in support, testimony in opposition. It looks like in this case, because we have two separate appellants and a staff report, we can just open it up to public testimony.
Yep.
But it would be helpful if people could say if they're responding specifically to one of the appellants to say so, and to clarify whether you support or in opposition, just so we understand where you are with regard to this hearing. If you'd like to sign up, you can do so with Carla over there. She has the sign-up list. How many do we have currently signed up?
Five.
We have five people. Okay, 3 minutes each. If you could just state your name for the record. If you are a paid lobbyist, we need to know that for council rules. Or are council rules suspended for a hearing?
Sorry, I apologize.
Council rules typically dictate that paid lobbyists need to tell us if they're a lobbyist. Is this separate?
No, they should still tell us.
They should still do that. Thank you. I appreciate that. Please call the first three.
Are Matthew Roman, Patrick Burke, and Bob Matheson.
Come on up. Thank you for being here, and thank you again for your patience. Why don't we start down on this end?
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Bob Matheson. I'm a senior superintendent for Howard S. Wright, the contractor leading the design build team for the Portland building. I'm here to read a letter into the record on behalf of Troy Dixon, the senior vice president, Oregon manager, who is unable to be here today. One of the most important decisions facing Howard S. Wright and DLR Group during the design phase of the building, Portland building, was how to meet the city's primary objective of solving the ongoing weathering problems associated with the building enclosure. Much of the enclosure is cast-in-place concrete, which is a category of enclosure technology referred to as a face seal system. This type of enclosure is generally one used on buildings when budget is a primary driver, not quality. Face seal systems are not resilient and require significant maintenance and renewal to perform. To renew the existing system and put new elastomeric paint on the building would not be an improvement of systems, but rather a maintenance activity, which would require continued maintenance to address concrete cracking for the life of the building. There are additional measures that are technical attempts to address the technical issues with face seal systems. However, each has limitations and do not solve the underlying problems. Howard S. Wright and DLR Group have studied many options to solve the weathering issues associated with the concrete enclosure and have elected to use a rain screen design to ensure the long-term weathering performance of the Portland building. The rain screen unitized curtain wall is the best overall solution for the project for the following reasons. Performance. The rain screen design is the highest performing system technology available. Warranty. The owner will get a manufacturer's warranty on the overall system, 5 years. Additionally, the owner will get all extended warranties from the component manufacturers, which is 10 to 20 years. Quality. The unitized curtain wall will be built in a factory under controlled environmental conditions with an in-house quality assurance team to inspect and sign off on all components and application of sealants and coatings. Cost certainty. The unitized curtain wall will have fewer variables on the installation, thereby providing an installation with less risk and more cost certainty. The elastomeric paint, sealant, and flashings enclosure system is more difficult to install in the field and does not have a secondary line of moisture intrusion engineered into the system. It is an assembly of parts and not an overall engineered system. With that, you have a warranty that is 1 to 2 years from the installers, which would be multiple trades. You would also have a warranty from the manufacturer on the paint and the sealants, usually 5 to 10 years. And this is on the material only. Maintenance. The concrete and elastomeric paint requires continual inspection and maintenance. There's a condensation risk. The patent concrete solution has an inherent risk of condensation occurring inside the walls of the building. Constructability issues, you'd have to remove the existing paint in order to perform the application of the new paint.
Thank you. And could I just get real clarification here? Where are you in terms of support or not support?
I'm in favor.
Very good. I just wanted to make that clear. I didn't want
Thank
to
you.
Infer that.
Supporting the appeal or supporting...
Pardon me?
You support the appeal or you... And there's two appeals.
I support the appeal one and the removal of the condition of the HVAC system.
So you agree with appellant one?
That is correct.
Very good. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Thank you. I'm speaking in support of appellant number one,
and my
name is Patrick Burke. I am an architect and a principal at Michael Graves Architecture and Design in Princeton, New Jersey. I have been an architect in the office for 35 years and started there in early 1982. Which happened to be the last year of construction for the Portland building. I am here today to represent our office and what I know were Michael Gray's hopes. Over the years, the state of the Portland building would come up now and again, and Michael would ask some of the firm's senior staff if we had any ideas for ways to improve the performance of the facades. Before his last trip to Portland in October 2014, Michael spoke with two of us and asked us, if you could do anything to the Portland building, what would you do? What Michael had in mind were two facade projects we built where the original facades were completely removed and we designed new facades. Michael's suggestion was to pull off the existing facades of the Portland building, like those projects we had done before, and rebuild it with a new and better performing facade system. We had to remind Michael that the facades were concrete and that that was part of the structural system and therefore could not be removed. Other than replacing the black glass with clear glass, we had no other good practical ideas in that conversation. My partners and I were all very impressed to see how comprehensive the current renovation proposal is for the Portland building. It provides a better performing office building for its users while respectfully following the original design intent. The original design that was built included the concept, the colors, the forms, the symbols. However, the final facade materials used were not what was intended in the design at all. Michael Graves did not want to see the Portland building demolished, but he also never understood having to keep the facades concrete simply because that was what was originally built. He did not see why one had to continue to accept the penalties that resulted from a construction budget that was way too low. Treating poor details and executions as sacred is ridiculous. The original facade material intent was using a larger sized Gladding's McMean glazed terracotta tile. The contractors backed Michael into using concrete as a facade material as the only solution to get within the budget. Michael was acutely aware that he would not win the design competition if he blew the budget, so he conceded. The Portland building is the only building we have ever built with poured concrete facades. The local architect responsible for the construction phase changed the glass to black glass, claiming that they needed it to do this for energy reasons. Michael was not happy about this. When we toured the Portland building at the open in October 1982, Michael told us that the black glass was a big mistake and that we were never to let that